Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Well, you know what they say, 5-1 is the most dangerous scoreline in football, and so it proved this week. But that was a real test for Manchester City, and they negotiated it with flying colours, especially having had the other tricky scoreline of being 2-0 up and in total control against a relegation candidate, and nothing bad happening there. Gold stars all around, everyone. Just kidding. On today's Blue Moon Podcast, we'll dig into the chaos of the last 7 days, with no shortage of talking points from the very not straightforward wins over Leeds and Fulham. We'll discuss why City are finding it so difficult to both keep control of games and wrestle control back when it slips from their grasp. We'll also be talking about tactical timeouts after Gianluigi Donnarumma needed treatment against Leeds, go with it, and the whole team headed towards the dugout for some words of inspiration. Plus, we'll look ahead to the upcoming matches with Sunderland and Real Madrid. Plenty to get through before we've even mentioned Erling Haaland's record-breaking century, so let's get to it. I'm David Mooney, and today I am joined by, from Sporty News, we've got Dom Farrell.
Hello, David.
And from Football 365, Sarah Winterburn.
Hello, David.
Hello. Now, I've just realised that at this point in the running order, I've written maybe a silly question here. So I obviously haven't written a silly question, so we'll dive straight into the... it kind of fits with the week that City have had, I guess, really. But the one thing that I have remembered to do, Dom, when I asked you to do this podcast, kind of long before Guardiola, before the Fulham game, anyway, I think it was after Leeds. You said, I'm covering the Fulham game. I'm going to it, but I'll have my head down for the final 20 minutes because I'll be writing. And I said, well, nothing really happens in the final 20 minutes of games. And then in the press conference, Guardiola had you lot bang to rights, didn't they?
With 5-1, do you expect the game we saw it? No, right? 5-1, everyone is over. Start to write articles. No, tomorrow, Manchester City's back. You know, finally, this kind of stuff. And after, to the trash. You're going to start again. Ali, let's go.
He got an applause for that.
The fellow that starts applauding is really rogue. So I wasn't in the press conference. I've been doing Mix Zone, but where you are at Fulham, you kind of have to go, they have to like let you back in at the press conference room. You're sort of left outside the ground. And they said, we couldn't go in back in because the press conference was going on. And it was Pep. And it was like, he was going on for ages. And you could hear he was like getting roaring responses from the gallery. It's like, what is he saying in there? But yeah, it is. It's totally bang to rights. And because he does, clearly he knows, because he's a man who is obsessive about everything and will like have bothered various Catalan journalists, no doubt. Well, what do you do at a football match? I like to think the idea of having your report finished on 80 to 85 minutes and hoping nothing else happens. I hope the stresses of that fry Pep's head, and he must think it's horrible. But yeah, what you want is an hour to go, 3-goal difference. Easy yeah. Street.
Having said that, how many words did you bin off on Tuesday night?
To be honest, it was all right because I did weird, and again, this is weird. I didn't go early on the intro because even though it was like 5-2 of an hour played, even as soon as like that Iwobi shot went in, it's like something's going to go weird here because I mean, it was a bit of a mad game. And also, 7 goals within an hour, it's like there's loads of time for things to happen here yet. So I did kind of hold off. And then when it was like, I kind of had everything done and ready to roll and then looked up to see Josko Gvardiol sort of grasping towards his own goal line. I'm like, oh, for God's sake. At that point, I was like, well, it's about right. This goes in for 5-all and we set it all on fire again. But absolutely bang to rights. I can't argue with what he said there at all, unfortunately.
Yeah. Sarah, I asked you to do this one, I think, before the Leeds game. So you've had two games where City have been in full control and then everything's gone to pot. What have you made of the week from the outside looking in?
I think it's absolutely fascinating. And the first response we had from a punter on Tuesday night was, well, it's typical City. We're back. This is like, this is how it's supposed to be. Like, we didn't like all this sort of strolling away, but this is almost like a return to the 90s with sort of Erling Haaland cast as Sean Gota. This is back to when you don't know what the hell is going on. And from the outside, it's absolutely brilliant. The only other thing I have to say is Erling Haaland must be absolutely gutted, because that was the story of the night was his, wasn't it? And then it was, no, that's not the story of the night, mate.
Yeah. Well, Dom, I had a look into this. The last time City had a 4-goal lead that was reduced to a 1-goal lead was the 6-3 against Leicester in 2021. And Laporte then scored to make it 5-3 at the time, and that kind of killed the momentum. But like the time before that, I genuinely can't tell you. And I've been back through City's fixtures to 1965 to find out. So we're going a long way here. It was like, all I can tell you is that it was before Star Wars was released. It was before we'd ever taken photographs of Mars or beyond with any sort of probe. The UK had never won the Eurovision Song Contest. They've won it 5 times since then. BBC Radio 1, 2, 3 or 4 didn't exist. And John Lennon had yet to call the Beatles bigger than Jesus. That's how long ago you've got to go back.
If you've been photographing Mars on Tuesday night, you'd have found everyone's heads there. So that it's funny, that Leicester game, because was that like that was like Boxing Day or the 27th or something? Because I remember that got grouped in. Everyone remembers that famous Boxing Day 1963, is it? Or 62, like the one where every game's about 7-5 or something.
Everyone had been on the sherry, yeah.
Well, wasn't those the days, I think, when they'd play on Christmas Day and play a return on Boxing Day, so everyone was just like drunk and tired. That game we had a bit of, you always get a crazy game around Christmas. City have done that on the 2nd of December. Lots of people haven't got decorations up yet.
They did it at the end of November as well. There's plenty of... Like, what wriggle room have they left themselves here to go mad over the Christmas period? Exactly. In all seriousness, though, Sarah, 2-0 against 18th at home, 5-1 against 17th away from home. Why are they not safe scorelines?
I mean, they should be. They're just not for this City side, are they? They'd be absolutely safe scorelines for Arsenal. They'd be probably a safe scoreline for Crystal Palace at the moment, but not a safe scoreline for this version of Man City. And the funny thing is that it's 2 wins, and yet they've never felt further away from a title challenge. Yeah, in theory, they're in a better position than they were this time last week, really, because they've got another 2 wins under the belt. But actually, you just immediately go, no, not a chance.
Yeah. Dom, it's weird having seen the performance against Newcastle and gone, that filled me with a lot more confidence than the performances where they won the games. But why have City then kind of... They haven't been controlling games very well all season, but they really turned the dial up to 11 this week. Why is it getting worse?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I'd concur with what Sarah said, because like in the frenzy to finally get something written. So in my report on Tuesday night, it was in the weird situation of this moves City 2 points behind Arsenal, but there is no way a team behaving like this has any right to get anywhere near a title. And then like you look at Arsenal last night having a boring, uneventful 2-0 win against Brentford. I mean, that's what wins your leagues. 5-4 away at Fulham doesn't really, as a rule. But who knows? We'll see, I guess. But I think it's a bit of a combination of circumstances. People have talked about like how Donnarumma's distribution and the playing out from the back isn't as good as it was being an issue. Of course, when he first came in, there was like quite a lot of clean sheets all linked together. But that stopped. And
how?
Yeah. And from being the guy that sort of instilled a big confident mentality, it now seems there's an element of, you know, his like relentless yellow cards. I mean, he didn't get booked on Tuesday night at least, you know, so there's that.
Got that one up as a positive, yeah.
I guess when he's getting balls screened past him from the edge of the box every 5 minutes, he can't really say he's been fouled. But he now doesn't seem like a reassuring presence. He seems like a presence that increases the panic. Um, But at the same time, if you talk about the defence not playing out very well, I think you've got a midfield that doesn't receive those balls as well as it did when people like Gundogan and De Bruyne were there. It's better having Foden in there, I think, definitely. But he's obviously out playing the right wing at the moment because none of the right wingers are in any sort of form, and he's coming in. And I think there was a couple of... I noticed on Tuesday night that when the thing was all going haywire, Reinders sort of got moved onto the left of the attack and Foden got dropped into midfield. Again, now Reinders had one of his more encouraging sort of first halves, you know, scores a good goal. He has got a real aptitude for breaking into the box and looking dangerous in that sort of way, but he becomes kind of invisible in the middle and defensive third, and that's an issue for a City midfielder when the team's under pressure. So the playing out isn't as good, the midfield isn't as available, and then their pressing kind of looks off. So if you put all that together, I mean, you're not controlling many games of football, are you?
No, but if you do, but if you get yourself into a position of scoring of a 4-goal lead, Sarah, as they did on Tuesday night, you would think of a classic City team. They keep the ball, and they can't even do that at the moment.
No, that does seem to be beyond them. I think Dom's right there. I think that the makeup of that midfield just isn't quite right, is it? There's not a lot of control in there. As much as Gundogan was way off it last season, you at least knew he'd be there and he'd be asking for it all the time, regardless of whether he had the legs. You know, he didn't have the legs. De Bruyne didn't have the legs, but they wanted it. Whereas that midfield, I don't know, I'm yet to be convinced by Nico. I think he seems a very, very sort of 6 out of 10 player to me. And like Reinders, like you say, is far better in that sort of breaking forward role than he is. He's not in front of the centre-halves asking for the ball, is he, or screening there. So I think it is that make that midfield. I mean, obviously, once again, you're back to, does Rodri fix this? Which, you know, is not the position you were supposed to find yourself in after all the money was spent this year. It still shouldn't have been, can Rodri come back and fix this? But that seems to be where you are again.
Yeah, the answer's probably yes as well, Dom, because like ultimately, if Rodri's in that team, you get to 5-2, 5-3, and Rodri's going, right, this is it. It's not like nothing else happens now.
Yeah, that's it. We could get to sort of Champions League knockout stages in March where you have a situation of Rodri and Nico together just shutting down a game. And I don't know if that's following the Arsenal template of get Zubimendi, get Marino, get as many big Spanish hulking lads as you can just to close games down, but that's a possibility. Yeah, and like obviously in the last 10 minutes, I thought Bernardo was good in terms of doing some of those old City things in terms of getting it, keeping it, the old Guardiola thing of put the ball in the fridge. But you then have, he'll do a little bit of that. I thought Cherki was good in that regard when he came on, as Guardiola mentioned. But then you've got Savinho running directly into four Fulham players in the middle of the pitch, like put the ball in the deep fat fryer. it's hard. I felt a bit for Bernardo this week, really, because he's been having this, and this is, again, another sign of Guardiola trying to work things out, make the team more balanced. He's playing this weird role at the minute where he's playing it right back in the build-up, sort of behind Nunes pushing on. But then when they press, he's coming up to sort of lead the press sort of quite near Haaland. And it's like, he is in his 30s now, and I know he's been a Duracell bunny, but it's like, are you trying to retire him? There was the photo online that you were sharing where it looked like Haaland was hugging you instead of Donnarumma.
If people haven't seen this, I genuinely thought someone had photoshopped my face onto Donnarumma there. That's how much it looked like it was me.
But that
obviously a similar size, David. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 6 foot and I'm 6 foot six, and you know, I'm weedy. I'm not, definitely not plump and squat. Definitely not.
I can't wait for the next pictures of you at the City Media game in a full Donnarumma bright pink kit. It's going to be great. But like, they're having this joyous moment hugging, and in the background, Bernardo is like bent over on his haunches, like just wiped out. And like, you think over previous years, he'd have had allies in that, like a Gundogan, like De Bruyne, but going a few years back, David Silva. But or even if he was fit, and I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, Kovacic knows a bit how to do that, but it did feel like Bernardo sort of being the grown-up trying to just drag them through at the end against Fulham. And yeah, that's a tough situation for him. So yeah, I think undoubtedly Rodri, you know, funnily enough, if you get the Ballon d'Or winner from 2024 back, it probably makes everyone's life instantly easier,
yeah,
not least all the midfielders.
Yeah, I mean, that notwithstanding, Sarah, because obviously he's been injured. We don't know kind of what the prognosis is on that. He always seems to be a couple of weeks away. So let's park that for a second, and maybe we do see him a bit more frequently in the second half of the season. We've seen in previous years, City have this sort of winter period where things look a bit sketchy and we don't really know what they are. And then they fix it and it becomes a title challenge in the second half of the season. How confident do you think we can be that that could happen again this season? Because the scale of these problems they don't feel like the scale of last season's problems. They feel kind of huge, but in a different way.
I think it's different, isn't it? Because you are still largely winning football matches. And I think that's kind of, don't forget that in amongst all this. And actually just being in the slipstream of Arsenal at the moment is an absolutely perfect place to be, I think. Within 4 or 5 points, that, you know, then you're just there, aren't you? If something goes wrong at Arsenal, and it could do, a few injuries, the bottle starts going, the brain starts wondering quite how we're going to win a title. City just need to be within 4, 5, 6 points. And I think there's a chance there. Will they sort it out again? I don't know. I think that's a really good point about Bernardo Silva. I think there's a little bit of him looking round and going, actually, there's nobody here that knows how to do this like I do. You know, like you say, even a Kovacic, you know, is looking round and probably thinking, this is not, you know, these are not the players that I'm used to playing with. This is not the effort that I'm used to seeing. I do think Pep's probably just thinking, I've only got one more year of Bernardo. I'm going to absolutely run him to the ground. If you think you're leaving, fine, but...
you're going to earn this departure, yeah.
You're going to leave a shadow of a man.
He's going to have his triumphant return to Benfica in a wheelchair. The other thing on Kovacic is Guardiola was talking about the injuries and like say Rodri will be. Is Rodri seems to be like a game by game. Is he ready yet? Is he ready yet? He said... But Kovacic will be long now. Did that mean a long amount of time, or he'll have really long hair by the same place?
I knew you were going there.
The hair transplant is—it's a wondrous thing. What's gone on there? Unbelievable.
Yeah, I just want to bring this in as well. We're good at the end of the show, but John emailed in to say, what's going on with Rodri? We last saw him for 6 minutes against Bournemouth, and since then, at every press conference, Pep just says, not yet, not yet, not yet. Sarah, I can guess, like, understandably, they will manage him game by game. But when Guardiola says, yeah, he's nearly ready, and then another 2 weeks have gone, and suddenly now we're at the start of December, it's going to be Christmas before we know it. We could be through the Christmas period. And if it's always, again, yeah, maybe next game, the season can suddenly, it can suddenly pass you by, can't it?
It can, yeah. But like I say, it all starts in earnest, doesn't it, really, January now. So I think, like you say, just staying in the slipstream, it doesn't matter if you win games 5-4, does it? And certainly it's a hell of a lot more fun than sort of a 1-0 or a 2-0. I think, I don't know, there's sometimes these players, aren't they, that are always 2 weeks away. And it's really frustrating as a fan, isn't it, to think, is this going to be the week? But they're doing just enough, aren't they? I think that's, you know, and as long as he's back for the sort of the knockout stages of the Champions League, I still think this City looks better than it did this time last year. I think there's more to be optimistic about. There's certain things, you know, Phil Foden's return to form. He looks a different player than he did 12 months ago. There are little things that, you know, I really like Ryan Cherki. I think when he settles a bit more, I think that's going to look a lot better. So there's loads of reasons to be optimistic. I just think there's quite a few that just give you that little niggling doubt at the back of your head.
Yeah, I must admit, Dom, at 5-1, I thought, this could be the game we look back on as the click.
Yeah.
That was a long 25 minutes I had after that one.
It was a click, but it was actually like a roof beam and the old roof fell in. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Is it? The thing with Rodri, I mean, as David, you'll definitely remember this, of like City people of a certain generation. Just a couple of weeks away is like a massive Michael Johnson alarm bell for me. Obviously, he will be fine, Rodri. And it's like, it's not uncommon. In fact, it would be uncommon if it didn't happen for someone who's been out for so long with an ACL to have muscular injuries when they come back. And he's had a bit of soreness in the knee that happens. He's now had a hamstring. So yeah, it's like, I think it's been a tough period for Nico. I mean, like Nico Gonzalez got taken off, I think, because he was exhausted.
And he also took the hardest shot to the bollocks I've ever seen. I saw that happen and thought, mate, just like go down. You need to go down here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any footballer would say, "Oh, I got substituted because I got hit in the balls." But it did look a bit like that, didn't it?
Yeah. But man gets hit also, with football. It's a classic of the genre.
I think he was hanging on as like an exhausted guy who's played every single game, and then that like sapped his final reserves, as it were. But So he has helped manage the Rodri-less scenario pretty well. I think maybe part of it not been managed so well the last week or so shows that he's fatigued. But yeah, hopefully once Rodri's back, they find themselves in a situation where you've got the best guy in the world in this position, certainly last time he was playing, and a guy who's grown into it in his absence. And then all of a sudden, it can very quickly go from how on earth do they make this team work at all? It's so flawed. So then it could be as simple as, oh, you've got Rodri and Nico, and then everything suddenly works, and you'll wonder how 5-4 against Fulham was ever plausible. Yeah. I mean, I think you'll always wonder that regardless, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. When you said, Dom, you looked up to see Guardiola on the goal line, I genuinely for a minute wondered which goal line you meant, because he was almost in at the other end as well.
That was so... I didn't read, again, so the journalists don't watch the end of football games chat. I didn't realise when he was charged with the other, he'd actually switched to left back, which made it a bit more plausible. I was sat next to Cy Bajkowski from the MEN, and I looked up, and where we were sat was like inside that half, and I saw Gvardiol there, like on my sort of the left of my eye line. It's like, what the fuck is the centre half doing there at 5-4? What's he doing?
In the 97th minute as well, yeah.
And it's like, oh, actually, hang on, he's playing left back now. And then Sy goes, yeah, but still. And it's like, yeah. It's
yeah, fair
still,
enough.
Still crucially supposed to be a member of the back four, but...
Yeah.
Well, at least Fulham's right winger wasn't scoring loads of goals, but...
Yeah, there we are. This is a paid promotion for NordVPN. That 2-0 defeat to Bayer Leverkusen a couple of weeks ago has put a lot more pressure on City's trip to Real Madrid this week. If you're one of the fans who's going to be heading off to Spain to hopefully watch City get back to winning ways in the Champions League, then you'll want to keep yourself protected online while you're there, especially if you're jumping onto public Wi-Fi in the airport or the hotel or something like that. For that, I use NordVPN. A couple of shows ago, you might remember Dan Burke stepped in to host because I was away on holiday. And while I was away, I made use of NordVPN to be able to watch TV from home. In the past, I've always used it while connecting to Wi-Fi up and down the country when trying to record interviews and features for the podcast as well. It's really easy. I just open NordVPN up on my laptop and then select a server to connect to. When I was abroad, I could pick a UK server and change my laptop's virtual location to back home so I could watch TV from here in the UK, while here in the UK, I can appear elsewhere in the world. There are more than 8,600 servers to choose from across 129 countries, and one NordVPN account can be used on 10 devices. I've got it on my laptop and my phone. Now, both of them are Apple devices, so I use it on macOS and iOS, but it also supports every major platform. You can also use it on Windows, Android, Linux, and even your Android TV. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/bluemoon. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan, and there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is also in the podcast episode description.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast.
Well, City did try something against Leeds, and not very subtly, to try and regain some control. While Gianluigi Donnarumma was getting some treatment, the team went for a team talk with Pep Guardiola. Let's take a look at what happened. In the 57th minute in the game with Leeds, with the score at 2-1 to City and with Leeds in the ascendancy, Gianluigi Donnarumma went down, waving to the bench. You know why he went down. I know why he went down. Donnarumma knows why he went down, and the Leeds manager Daniel Farke knows why he went down.
Everyone knows why he went down, right?
Exactly as I was saying. Even the commentary on City's own stream with the commentator Alistair Mann and ex-City goalkeeper Nicky Weaver didn't try to hide what was going on.
So Donnarumma's getting treatment, and all the City players have raced over to the sideline. Well, we've seen opponents do it, Nicky. Looks as though City are as well.
It's always... I was going to say it's a bit of a giveaway when the sub goalkeeper doesn't go out to warm up, but I think James Trafford's just gone out there just to give it a bit more realism, if you like. Credibility, yeah. So it's the oldest trick in the book. I know they spoke about trying to stamp out, but I really don't know what you can do. It is what it is. Both teams use it. You know, it's double standards. If it was the other way, Pep would be going, you know, ballistic, as Daniel Farker is now.
Farker wasn't impressed on the touchline, as Nicky Weaver says there. He was still upset about it in the post-match press conference.
Felt like you had all the momentum to possibly go and win until probably Donnarumma went down and had treatment. Could you feel that from the side as well?
Yes. Yeah.
He seems to be down quite a while for not a lot. What did you make of it all?
It's not like the elephant in the room. It's more like you can speak about it anyhow. So you can ask me what I think about it or whatever. But why he went down, I think it was obvious.
Now, it's not insignificant to mention that Leeds were still losing when it happened. And they did go on to equalise after the incident. It's not like Donnarumma's treatment broke the opposition's flow when they were chasing a winner, as the reporter in that clip suggested.
It's within the rules. It's smart. I asked the force official, do you want to do something against it? No. Our hands are tied. We can't do anything. We know that this happens, and you know. But if we don't educate our players in football what to do in terms of fair play, sportsmanship, whatever, and you just try to bend the rules somehow just to your advantage, and you can even do a fake injury in order to do additional team talk, I think it's nothing what I personally like anyhow. But if it's within the rules, I can't complain about it. There's a reason why the goalkeeper goes down, not the field player anyhow, because the field player has to go out anyhow. So whatever, it's within the rules anyhow, it's smart, everything's okay. I think we should change something.
In commentary, Alistair Mann mentioned other teams doing similar. Farker was asked in the press conference about the same sort of tactic being used by Spurs and England. The Athletic's Sam Lee says it's not a new thing.
City were, I don't know if they were annoyed, but they were certainly like noted the fact that Arsenal were doing it a lot. In that season when City won the treble, but Arsenal started really well, they were like, they do this quite a lot. But then Bayern, I think Bayern complained to Cheeky about it because City did it against Bayern in one of the Champions League legs. So obviously it's been going on for a while, yeah. I don't know if it extends to everyone, does it? I don't know if it is an everyone does it kind of thing. Like, I would hope that one of Daniel Farker's teams has never done it.
Meanwhile, Pep Guardiola wasn't keen to say much about it after the Leeds game.
You did a team talk with the players when Gianluigi Donnarumma went down. Daniel Farker's just been in and kind of said that Gianluigi obviously wasn't injured and he only went down for you to do it.
To be honest, I didn't speak with Gigi. I know what happened, and when it happened, I look back to the dugout. I said, James, warm up, James Trafford, when to move. So honestly, I don't know. Next press conference, you can ask me. I will ask to Gigi.
Is it beneficial for you to kind of have a team talk at that? Because you obviously needed to bring the players in, and you know it's handy to get a message across at that moment. I think that's what.
Well, of course, every time I would love to have a timeout, but I'm pretty sure if we do it again, the Premier League will be fine us again. So. Better that we don't do it.
Now, it does feel like it's only blown up because it's City that's done it on this occasion. But then again, City weren't exactly subtle about what they were doing. Ruben Dias signalled for Donnarumma to go down, and then he made a big gesture to the entire team to get to the touchline. Meanwhile, after the game, Phil Foden didn't exactly hide it in his post-match interview with the Premier League.
They changed it around in the second half. They changed the system. We couldn't seem to get going, get any passes together. And we found ourselves 2-2. It was a frustrating half, but you know, when we had a little short break, the manager got us together to adapt to their formation, and we started playing again.
Back in October, the football lawmakers, IFAB, met to talk about ways to improve the flow of games, and the tactic of the goalkeeper going down to force a tactical timeout was discussed at length. One proposed change in the laws was to ban players from going to the touchline when this happens, while another was for teams to nominate an outfield player to leave the field for 30 seconds when play restarts. It has been going on for a while, but now City have made a song and dance about how they did it, it might soon be against the rules.
Hi, it's Nicky Weaver, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
So Sarah, did like being perfectly honest, as a non-City fan, do you think people only reacted like this because City did it and people don't like City?
I think there's definitely a case for that. I think any sort of sense that City are trying to cheat the system, whether it's, you know, 115 ways of doing it or just one during one game, I think there's a
116 now.
Yeah.
There's a certain time wasting. Certain glee that comes with it, I think that's just part of the furniture of where you are and what happens. You know, we see over and over again, it's only really negativity about City that has any interest to the wider public. So, you know, this is another one where it's like you spend all that money, break all those rules, and you're still reliant on some big bastard pretending he's hurt himself.
Yeah, Dom, I mean, part of this, I wonder as well. I mean, first off, like, did it work? Because Leeds made it 2-2 after Donnarumma sat down for a bit, and City still struggled to control the game. And then Foden's goal. When Foden scored that winner, one of my mates texted our group chat and said, how's it looking? And I still said, I still think Leeds are more likely to win this if either team's going to do it.
Yeah, when you get 10 minutes injury time given, you don't want to score in the first, do you?
No, that's stupid. Stay on.
You've gone too soon. You've gone too soon with your last gasp winner, Phil. There are so many more gasps. So, yeah, I'm sorry, on the Donnarumma thing, I simply can't, in this instance, I just can't get past the idea that no one's mentioning, yeah, they had a big team talk and then started again and were crap and conceded. And conceded from a comedically conceded penalty. Like, I mean, I struggle to get exercised about it because, and listen, it's not to say they should have done it, but if they were trying to gain an advantage, they emphatically didn't gain one. I think obviously the way around this would probably be like they have now, where the player has to stay off for 30 seconds before coming back on. I guess if a goalie goes down, you nominate a player or the team captain, or you have to remove a player for 30, because obviously you can't play without the goalie. But so, I mean, listen, if it was City, probably poor old Bernardo Silva might finally get 30 seconds to stand still and then on you go. So, yeah, I think that's probably a way around it. But, yeah, it was, they did it in such a ham-fisted way.
Well, it was the way Diaz just kind of went, Gianluigi, can you just go down for me, please? Go down. Yeah, now down. And then he was like, everybody, over to the bench. Come on, everyone, now.
Do you remember, I remember people used to get annoyed at the yellow cards Ederson got for time wasting. Imagine thinking the goalie was getting booked too often before Donnarumma arrived. But people used to get annoyed that, oh, well, goalies waste time against City all the time. And Ederson gets a yellow card, second time he does it, it's like, yeah, because he was like horrifically bad and unsubtle at it, like so bad. If you're gonna do dark arts, there's got to be a little bit of subtlety. And the whole thing from Donnarumma not being sure he was injured till Diaz told him he was, to Phil Foden doing an interview afterwards going, oh, the manager had a bit of a tactical chat with us. It's like, Phil, that's the quiet part out loud, isn't it? So the absolute, it being every element of it being about as subtle as an earthquake means, yeah, they're probably going to get a bit of stick for it, but it really didn't work at all. And I think to make a semi-serious point with City, that goes back to what we were saying about the brain draining the squad. One of the great things about the brilliant Guardiola teams is how they were so well coached and so sort of in the weeds of everything he does and how his team should operate. They would kind of manage these things themselves. I mean, I'm sure someone can give me an example, but that sort of prime four in a row City, I can't remember a time ever where there was a need to have a mid-half team talk because there was guys on the pitch who were good enough and bright enough to problem solve themselves within what the manager had given them. So yeah, the fact he's had to call a team talk is that, from a City point of view, that would be my biggest concern rather than the fabric of the game.
Yeah. The biggest concern being that they had to do it or the fact that it didn't work.
I mean, a little from column A, a little from column B, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
It does raise the question whether it can be called a dark art if it is in so much brightness. You're literally
fluorescent art.
Big pointy finger saying, look, we're going to go down and we're going to get some time. Yeah, they just need more practice.
Yeah, and as Dom says, the irony of it all was that it resulted in 10 minutes of added time in which City were then hanging on for 9 of it. So there's even when they're trying to do the dark arts, it doesn't work out very well. Sarah, I mean, we've got this far into the show, we've not even mentioned Haaland, and you said before about he must be annoyed that the news this week has buried his achievement, and we've buried it ourselves right here, so that's not great. 71 with his left foot, 11 with his right foot, 17 with his head, one with other. Other is his arse at Chelsea in a 4-0
draw. I was going to guess at bollocks, but is it
yeah,
arse?
It was arse.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it was kind of a
bit of both, yeah.
Not to go into an anatomy, I mean, it was kind of betwixt and between, wasn't it? The way he sort of
He kind of groined it over the line, didn't he? That was the that's probably the kindest way to put it. I got a few more stats as well. 94 of them inside the box, only 6 outside the box. He's very much a fox in the box in that sense. 57 at home, 43 away. Dom, you'll like this. I went through and found out which kits he likes scoring in the most at City. I didn't separate out the home kits though, so that obviously dominates the blue shirt. 8 in the yellow and black. You know, the one he scored at West Ham in with the kind of run over by a steamroller in a cartoon kit.
Yeah.
3 in the diagonal red and black stripes, 5 in the white with maroon trim, 2 in the dark blue with the kind of pink lightning on. They were both at Spurs.
Like basically title winning goals, weren't they? I read these notes and I was like, dark blue. But yeah, that...
that horrendous one. 4 in the Wembley tribute kit, 3 in the maroon kit, and 2 in all black.
Oh, what about the one he scored at PSG in the Noel Gallagher designed piss coloured kit?
Yeah, not a Premier League goal, is it though?
Oh god, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
There you go. Thankfully, the Noel Gallagher. I always thought it looked a bit more like, you know, when you put a magnet next to the TV and it used to change colour. That's kind of how I thought that Noel Gallagher kit looked.
It's a nicer description than piss, isn't
piss,
it?
Sarah, his XG for the Premier League is 93, so he's outscoring his XG. But also, like, even if he wasn't, 93 seems ridiculously high.
It does a bit. I mean, you would want him to be sort of near it. But anyway, I was just going to point out that David's going to spend all night tonight looking at the kits for the Champions League goals as well. He doesn't need to wait for a boiler man to be this dull, do you?
No, I didn't even need to. I didn't even need to look at the video for these. I was doing it from memory. I'm just going through the fixtures. Oh, they wore this kit on that one, this one, and that one. No, I didn't. I watched the video. Yeah, but 100 goals in 111 appearances, Sarah, is mad. And the fact that he could have still broken Shearer's record and gone another 11 games without scoring, like, that's insane.
It's an absolute madness, isn't it? I mean, there's a little bit of a caveat here that obviously Shearer wasn't playing for teams, well, certainly not all the time, for a team as good as this City side or as creates as many chances as this City side. But you're not interested in caveats, are you? You're interested in the colour of his shirt. It's a phenomenal record. Again, you don't expect credit or too much credit outside of your own blue bubble, unfortunately, because, you know, people just don't feel like that about him. The idea of him being a robot is the one that's kind of prevalent outside of City, and there's a real reluctance to give him any credit, isn't there? And I think, I mean, it's embarrassing in a way, but there is that reluctance. And personally, I think he's absolutely brilliant. Love watching him, but there's a lot of people who just want to dismiss it, don't they? And sort of say, oh, it's City, isn't it?
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
you know what I love it? I think is an underrated quality of his is he. It's almost like his ability to, he takes everything seriously. He takes the game seriously and he takes his job seriously. But he's obviously having fun as well. The number of times where he's not necessarily on the wind up, but he's having a laugh or kind of with the opponent at the opponent, and he's like the whole YouTube channel thing that he's got going on as well. Like his personality is so very clear on the pitch, and you can kind of see that he enjoys it. He enjoys the challenge. He enjoys the kind of the battles that he has. He gets frustrated at it, but also there's kind of this element of just letting himself enjoy it and get on with it.
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing about him as well is, like I said, he got this sort of idea from outside City that he is this robot, and yet he couldn't be further away from being a robot, could he? Because the way that his personality is there, absolutely. You know, and you'd think you'd get a bit bloody bored, wouldn't you? Another goal, but he always looks like he's incredibly chuffed, whether it goes in off his left foot, right foot, bollock, head, whatever. He always looks happy, you know, happy as a sandboy.
Yeah. Dom, you spoke to him after the game. And like I thought your interview with him was really good, because it's like his personality came through in it. And especially as someone who in the past in post-match interviews can be very matter of fact and can be very blunt with reporters. He was quite relaxed and quite, and he was having a laugh about the record and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, sort of to go behind the curtain. Well, I mean, at Fulham, where they put the mix on, it's actually behind a constructed wooden board, like you sort of sectioned off. So they have to kind of bring a player to you. And there's only a couple of us there. And Haaland doesn't do the written press a lot. So he came out and he's straight up, he's like, oh, where is everyone? Do you think it's too cold? So he was like, sort of, he got to get his chest out as being the Norwegian guy who's happy to stand there in 5 degrees in his shorts and T-shirt. But yeah, from that point, he was like, he did seem in, he sort of struck me as like, you know, to pick up what Sarah was saying, really, he seemed almost like giddy about what a stupid game it had been. Because obviously we did have to talk about everything that had happened on the pitch. And then about 3 minutes into the chat, you go, oh, by the way, yeah, your record. Because I did say to him at the start of it, it feels like it's about 6 months ago since you scored, because so much had gone on. And yeah, so he's... My main thought, because he doesn't do the written press a lot, would you just want to kind of keep him talking? Because in a mix-on situation, it's easy for them to, you know, they're not obliged to be there. It's not for TV. They can go and get on the bus whenever they want. But he did seem in a good mood. So you think, all right, just keep him chatting. And yeah, I think early in his career, he had quite a lot of like monosyllabic interviews and sort of pieing things off of it, particularly when there was a few quite famous ones when he was at Dortmund of just being like, yeah, no. But I guess you do forget then he was 2021, he is now in his mid-20s, and that is, you'd like to think, is quite a big, a time when you sort of develop as a person and a personality, and you become a bit more sort of, you know, better expressing yourself. But yeah, it was nice, because sometimes you get players who are there out of grim obligation, dragged over the press officer. It felt like on Tuesday, he was like, in a good mood and fancy to chat, which obviously makes your own job easier from a journalist point of view.
Yeah. Another player to touch on, we mentioned him earlier on, but Sarah, Phil Foden, Guardiola said after the game that he's been back since the start of the season. He got asked the question, does this show that he's back? And Guardiola basically said, no, he's been back since the start of the season. That kind of being said, this last week, Leeds and Fulham, it really has brought that into focus, hasn't it?
Yeah, so I think it's a bit of a lazy question, that, isn't it? Is he back? Because he's scored a couple of goals. I think anyone who's seen anything of City all season could have told you that there was a bit more of a spark about him than there was last season. You know, he's looked a bit closer to that player of 2 years ago, hasn't he, all along? I think it's interesting what Dom said before about his position as well. We do see the best of him in the middle. It is a shame that it's been pushed out to that right, but it does mean he, the goals are more likely to come from there. He's further up the pitch. You know, he's probably, apart from Haaland, the best finisher in that team. And I think the closer you get him to the goal sometimes is probably, you know, yes, you are losing a little bit in the middle of his combative nature and the sort of the one touch stuff, and in tight spaces he's really good, but you get him on the right side, he's going to score more goals. And that means he makes more headlines. But, you know, all the talk is nice, because all the talk a few weeks ago, wasn't it, was nobody can score apart from Haaland. Now Haaland's had a relatively quiet week for him. You know, the fact that City have scored all these goals and only one's come from Haaland is actually quite, you know, you wouldn't have seen that coming 2 months ago. So I'm sure Pep's very happy to talk about Foden again, because it means he's not getting that question over and over again about what do you do if Haaland doesn't score? Well, there's the answer. You know, we win 5-4.
yeah. I mean, Haaland hit the post twice at Fulham as well, Dom. So he could have scored a couple more, but it did fall to the other players to get the job done. How much was Foden's maturity now as a player important in a game like Fulham? Or was it just one of those games that, like, it doesn't matter how mature the team is because it's going so, like, tits up at various different stages. You can only control as much as what you can control. Foden kind of couldn't really get a handle on the game because nobody else was doing it either.
Yeah, I mean, I think Foden was at his best at Fulham before it went haywire, when it was a more normal game of football, and he was fantastic within that. But like I said before, the fact he got moved into central midfield and sort of, you know, Ryan has shifted out of the way shows the esteem Guardiola holds him in. And yeah, it's a tricky one because I think at the moment he is both City's best right winger and City's best central midfielder. But, you know, Dr. Cougar hasn't got to cloning yet, has he? So that's that. But I think, but yeah, it speaks for itself. You stick him on the right wing. He's when he's had games playing, and he's not on the right wing, he's not hugging the touchline. When he's coming in off there, his goal threat's there for all to see. But what I think has been really good this year, and, you know, the idea of him being back is, like Sarah was saying, the performances have been there for weeks and weeks. And whereas last season, there was, do you remember that little period in January where he scored, like, because he does tend to score in clusters, he's a bit streaky. Mm. And he got like quite a few goals around January, and then it's like he's back. But actually, that was covering over all the other things that weren't working and weren't, you know, things that were wrong for him. Whereas this year, it's been, you've seen him really come back to himself of like this phenomenally gifted creative player, and the goals are now like the cherry on the cake at the minute. So it's nice it's happened that way.
Yeah. Right, well, we're going to look ahead now. We're going to start with a look at Sunderland. Earlier this week, I spoke to Ant Waterson from Roka Reports. This was before Sunderland's draw with Liverpool and City's win at Fulham. So that's the context of this interview. But I started by asking how surprised he is at their start to the season.
No, I must admit, I keep on thinking I'm going to wake up at some point and I'm in a hotel room at Wembley and we're about to play Sheffield United. It's madness. It's absolute madness. The fact that we've come up and we've done so well, obviously just lost three games all season. All three games were when we wore our black shirts, so I think that should be banned now. But everything else, I mean, we've been outstanding, man. It's like the players that they've brought in have all been fantastic. Obviously led by Granit Xhaka, but you look at like even Brian Brobby now starting to really come good, and it's just they've got no fear. You know, we're going into a game like we're playing Liverpool, as you said, Liverpool on Wednesday, City on Saturday. I'm thinking, meh. You know, it's just another game now. It's just like, you know, the sky's the limit for them, like, to be honest. I can't wait for this week, even though it's like, you know, two hard games on paper away from home. Just can't wait for it to see what we can do.
Yeah, it's a weird one as well, because I guess at this stage of the season, I mean, you look at the previous two seasons, all three promoted sides have gone straight back down. Do you feel like, I don't want to say safe already, but you know what I mean? It feels like you're not going to be in that camp, and it feels like you're not going to be in that camp quite comfortably.
Do you know what I always said at the start of the season? It was like, I'll take 17th. And then obviously they brought in the players, you're thinking they're having to push at something. And now, I stopped thinking about relegation when we drew 1-1 against Villa. When you know, we were down to 10, they went 1-0 up. Villa were a good side. It was like, you know, Villa were just on the... They're on the start of going on this run that they're on now. You look at them now, they're third in the table. The fact that we pushed, we got a draw, we would have been good value for a win there with 10. It was like, this team isn't going down. And then, you know, we went and beat Chelsea away and all that. And it's... I literally don't think about it anymore. You still get... You know, players at the you'd still get fans at the stadium. Like this lad who was sat next to the press, and he was like, I think we've got a chance of staying up now. I was like, you reckon? But no, I think there's certainly three worse teams than us this season, probably a good few. And I think top half pushing possibly for European spots probably the aim now, which is mad, you know, considering, like I said, at the start of the season, everyone had us written off. So it is what it is, but I can't wait. I'm just so looking forward to it. Every game now is an event, and I just look forward to every game now. It's been...
Yeah, you mentioned the transfers as well, because that's been a story, the sheer volume of transfers and the number of players that came in. How have they all settled in?
All of them have been, all of them settled in brilliantly. You know, there's not one of them who doesn't play. Possibly at the exception, probably Simon Dingra, who you probably thought would have done better than what he did. And then obviously against United, he got hauled off after about 30 odd minutes when we went 2-0 down, because his defensive work wasn't up to scratch. And in this team, if you don't work hard, you're not going to get in. And since then, he hasn't really had that much game time. Obviously, he's got the Cup of Nations, which hopefully will improve him. But everyone else, you know, like the likes of Naughty Mucky Ealy, he's been outstanding. Alderati at the back, he's been outstanding. And then even like the ones we got Bertrand Traore on a 1-year free, and he would get his first goal on Saturday. But every game like that he's played, he's looked better and better and better. So literally, like I say, but one or two who, you know, they know they've come in for squad, like to be a squad player, like, you know, Masuaku, who's had a couple of games, hasn't looked great, hasn't played since. But, you know, the vast majority of them have all been brilliant. And what the best thing about it is, David, they've all got what this club's about. You know, like the fact that they, you know, we're getting players all the time, giving the crowd, you know, wanting more from the crowd. And it's all led by, like I say, the signing of the season and Granit Xhaka, who's just been outstanding. The fact he's playing for Sunderland's mad enough. The fact that you can tell that this is probably the club he's wanted to be at all his career, where he could be a leader. He injects all of his, you know, all of his enthusiasm into the crowd, and the crowd gets behind him and stuff. And this is probably the right place, right time for him. He's been amazing, like really, really good. But all of them have been outstanding. Like I said, look at Broby just coming in now, 2 goals and an assist in his last 3 games, I think it's been. So, yeah, it's brilliant.
Is it a bit weird as well to see, because I remember when this started happening with City, and like you, it's a bit odd to see players coming in from kind of like Atletico Madrid, Besiktas, you know, Paris Saint-Germain, Ajax, and then they're coming to Sunderland. Like, does that feel odd?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's never happened before. You know what I mean? If we have, I mean, I remember like a few years, a long time ago now, actually, was when we got Roy Keane as manager, we'd signed a lad from Barcelona called Arnau Riera. And he only played 1 game, got sent off about 4 minutes into his debut in a cup game against Bury. It was either Bury or Southend. I'll probably get there. Probably get Celtic. I think it was Bury.
Those were the days.
Yeah. And now, you know, we're signing these, and they're not just, you know, also around who've had the, you know, have had the time and had the time in a sudden everything like that. The players who have turned like big clubs down to come to us, like Naughty Mucky Ealy turned Roma down. Come to Sunderland, would have been playing Champions League. Granit Xhaka, I keep saying it, he was at Leverkusen playing every week for Leverkusen. Ten Hag went in and said, no, we're not selling him, he's staying here. 3 days later, we signed. And even like, you know, the likes of the Gertruda, who they've got, and he's at a big club. You mentioned Alderete was at Atletico Madrid. It's something where you're like, we're not used to it because we haven't seen it happen before. You know, and they've all been brilliant. They've all really, really got what the club's about. And they've improved us tenfold. Like say, any Sunderland fan would have said, they'd have put your hand up for 17th. Now we're 7th or whatever we are in the table. And we're valued for it. We're not like, it's not as if we've like just gone around playing all the teams below us. We've played majority of the top 6 now. We've only lost 3 games. Arguably, Burnley, we should have got something out of it. United, we were poor. And Fulham, we were poor. But apart from that, every other game, we're unbeaten at home. We've surprised a lot of sides. We took points off probably the best team in the country in the minute, in Arsenal. And we rattled them, and not many teams have rattled them this season. We had them rattled. It took a mistake and a worldie for them to go 2-1 up, and we still got a point. So it's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And that also brings us to the weekend where, I mean, you don't have to go that far back to realise that no matter what City did, Sunderland would still always get points and still always win. Are you fancying a return to the good old days of the Sunderland City hoodoo?
It's different times, aren't they? We've both gone in our certain directions, haven't we, since those great days of the 1-0 wins. but I think, you know, do you know what? I think we can get something. I watched this, obviously, against Leeds, and you know, to be 2-0 up and comfortable at the Etihad, you expected City to go on to win 5-6, I think. You'd probably see Haaland probably getting a couple or whatever. And it took a last-minute winner, didn't it, through Phil Foden. And there was some poor defensive. I think City kind of dug their own grave a little bit. You know, give away a really sloppy first goal and a penalty. And this is against a team who I don't think are as good as us. And the table probably suggests it, and the manager is massively under pressure with a poor away record as well. I fancy us to get, if we turn up and we rattle City like what we can do, we'll get something. Whether it's three, I don't know. I'll take a draw now, though, to be honest.
How will you go about it? Because, I mean, in terms of play style, like in days gone by, you would get points off City by sitting deep and breaking. And it does feel like City are a bit more vulnerable this season to teams that are happy to have possession and happy to play a bit higher up. Is that something you'll do at the Etihad?
What we've kind of been doing, which we didn't actually do on Saturday, which was quite weird, we have been sitting and breaking, and it gave a great effect against Arsenal and Chelsea. Against the big sides, we have been doing that. But when Bournemouth came on Saturday, we played like 100 miles an hour, similar to what they did. We matched what they did. And luckily enough, you know, we got 3 points from it. You know, we're 2-0 down, never see a die attitude, got back to win 3-2. And for me now, I'm like, if we play football against some of these sides, we can actually, you'll compete, because we're very, very solid at the back. You know, we've got we changed up a little bit on Saturday, brought Alderete back in, and Trey Hume missed out. But even if we've got Trey Hume to come back in to, you know, play a fullback, who's probably a better fullback than what McAuley is. McAuley is probably better centre half. But we can change that to a five, or we can go back to a four like what we did on Saturday. I think we'll probably change to a five and try and ping a counter attack, play our fast players on the wings as wing backs and try and ping a counter attack. But it'll be an interesting game, I think. You know, I don't think it'll be a walkover, as what obviously a lot of pundits will put down, because, you know, these are just people who don't really watch us play. You know, I'll say Chris Sutton for one. but it'll be an interesting game. If we can keep Haaland quiet, I think we've got a chance. And obviously Haaland hasn't been as on fire as he has been, you know, at the start of the season, what he is now, isn't he? So it'd be an interesting one.
Yeah, who is likely to be the players that will do it? If you're going to take the points, where will the performances be in the Sunderland team that swing it your way?
So I mentioned at the back, obviously, with Dan Ballard kind of winning everything this season. I don't think he's lost an aerial duel yet, to be honest, and he's been class. Has a really, really good partnership with Alderete. So, like I say, if we keep Haaland quiet, and then it's about winning the midfield battles, it's always about that, obviously. Obviously, Noah Siddiqui, who does not stop running, you know, for like 100, I think it was 109 minutes that played on Saturday gone, he did not stop. Did not stop one. And then what it does, that brings our flair players into effect, because they're doing all the work for our flair players up front. And the big player for me at the minute who's been outstanding the last couple of weeks has been Enzo Lefebvre. You know, we got him last year to play in the Championship, and he looked every bit, you know, a top player. But he didn't get that much chance to play football in the Championship, because it's a different level altogether. Now he's raised his level, because we've gone up a division. He just looks absolutely sublime, and in the 10, he is so good. So I expect him to kind of, you know, be the playmaker and all that, bring our wide men into play. And I imagine Broby will start if he hasn't started on Wednesday against Liverpool. I'd imagine he'll start, and he's a handful. He's a beast. Big, big boy. He'll try and bully, you know, which I'm assuming will be Diaz and Guardiola if they're fit. So it really will be an interest. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good, as long as we show up, because obviously you've got to show up against City. As long as we show up, and as you said before, we've had some crackers in the past. So it's all looking to be a really, really good game.
Yeah, I tell you, there's a lot of nerves on my side, let's put it that way. and we have been doing terribly on the charity bet on the podcast this season. Crazy. So come on, give us a score prediction, and please get it right, because we've not won much money for the charity this season.
not being a betting man, and I can't back my team to lose, so I'm sorry to the charity if City already win. but I think it'll be a draw. I do. I think I'll go for a 2-2.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
I mean, good luck you two on this one, because given City's struggles in the last week, Sarah, how on earth do you expect this one to go? Sunderland look pretty good.
I mean, the law of football means this is going to be a nil-nil, isn't it? Because we're all going to predict, like, 8-7, 6-3, and actually it's probably going to be an absolute god-awful, boring nil-nil. And some people will think, oh, this is much better, isn't it? No, but, oh, God, I don't know. Because that Sunderland side is really good. I mean, this is, we're way past the point now of kind of, oh, that, you know, new season, new, you know, is it just a promoter's side being giddy? And they're not just good at the Stadium of Light. They're good everywhere. Got leaders all through that team. Really good spine. You know, anything, you know, the centre-halves and Xhaka, absolutely brilliant. And Isidore runs his nuts off up front. I think it's tricky, really tricky. I think, you know, would you take a draw now?
I mean, I personally think you have to gamble at this stage, being this far behind Arsenal and the stage of the season. But I think you have to roll the dice and see what happens. But Dom, the other side of this as well is, and I don't know if Sarah is party to this, but City fans will be in PTSD with games against Sunderland from the past, because Sunderland come to the Etihad in previous years, and in two title winning seasons, like, got a draw where everyone went, well, that's it, that's over. And they kept winning 1-0 at the Stadium of Light, with barely any possession.
Yeah, those 1-0s. But the thing is, City give everyone 50-50 possession now, though, so it's all cool. Because, yeah, that 3-3 where Kolarov and Balotelli started fighting over a free kick.
Yeah.
Those were the days.
Yeah, they got a 2-2 where Vito Manone chucked it in his own net at the death, and that got them a point. Yeah, yeah.
That was, his goalkeeper on that was like, that Nasri goal, wasn't it? He looked like a kitten going after a ball of yarn. He couldn't quite. He was like grasping and grasping. Those were two pretty unhinged games, obviously, towards the end of the season. But, yeah, given the mood City are in, yeah, it could go again. I think it probably helped City that Sunderland have put such a big effort in at Anfield. You know, they've been on this run of putting together great results. So you would think a bit of fatigue would set in. But again, an unchanged City team just were involved in a 5-4. It's he's going to have to rotate a bit, I would think. Mainly because you can't get to a situation like they did against Leverkusen of it had been unchanged team for three games and then, all right, I'm just going to throw all these guys in. You're looking at things, whether it's the right wing, and maybe you try Marmoush there, or whether it's getting a bit more control in pockets and Rico Lewis has a role somewhere maybe, or just, you know, Kushinov to stiffen up the defence. For all those guys, it's going to be better for them if they come in the game with three or four changes rather than all getting blammed in together again against Brentford in a couple of weeks in the Carabao. So, yeah, I think he's going to have to change it. And I think that's an opportunity to kind of maybe bring a bit more normality and control to things. But I mean, you can't really be sure.
Yeah. I was going to say, Sarah, I've kind of looked at a few options that we could talk about in this bit of what Guardiola could do. And as Dom says there, like, it could be you take Matthias Nunes out and bring Kusinov in at fullback. It could be that John Stones comes in to give Guardiola some time out. You feel like you can't let Nico Gonzalez rest because, as much as he's still learning the role, it does all fall apart without him. Reinders, as Dom said, as a bit earlier on, you know, has a habit of disappearing a bit in games at the moment because he's still new and learning the ropes. Marmoush could come in, but again, there's so many question marks over the players that you're bringing in. Like, I don't know kind of how it looks, even if you only make two or three changes instead of the kind of 10 that you made against Leverkusen. I still don't know how that affects the team.
I mean, I certainly don't think we'll see anything near Leverkusen, will we? I think even he realises that was a ridiculous mistake. And like Dom said, the worst thing you can do is change every, you know, then any sense of rhythm is missing, isn't it? If you change a load of people at once. Mind you, there's no sense of rhythm anyway. It's an absolute mess. So what's the point? How bad could it be? No, I think you're right. I think it'll be on the fringes that you see changes. I think, like you said, there could be a change at right back just because Nunes is being worked so hard at the moment. Who knew that was ever going to happen last season? Right wing, yeah, you'd probably bring Foden back into the middle, wouldn't you? And because that Sunderland midfield is really combative. It, you know, every cliche about that sort of team, but they are incredibly combative in that middle of the park. So you probably want Foden in there. And like you say, you do have options on the right, don't you? And they all come with a caveat. As you said, there's a Savinho caveat, there's a Marmoush caveat, there's a Cherki caveat. But like you say, what you gain from pushing Foden into the middle might be sort of okay, losing a little bit of him on the right-hand side. But I think there will be, and like you said, Nico probably won't get changed. Like you say, he's the one who's got to hold it all together, even if I think he isn't quite doing it. He's still the only option in there. So I think you will see two or three, but I don't think you'll see anything like wholesale changes. I mean, you'd like to think at sort of 5-1 you'd be able to take a few off, but...
Apparently not. No. Dangerous scoreline. It is a dangerous scoreline.
Everyone says that.
Famously. Mm. Dom, the other side of this is we talked about the control. We talked about... we touched on the problems in the build-up. How much of this could be an issue over these two games? Because they've got Real Madrid, who aren't in the best form themselves, but they are Real Madrid. You've got Sunderland, who are in really good form, who will come to the Etihad with no fear and will be looking to cause an upset. And you've got City, who against 17th and 18th in the table this week, got pressed in such a way that they ended up having to keep giving the ball to Donnarumma, who would play it long, and then they'd lose the 50-50. That feels like it could become quite a big problem this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you're picking out a dark horse here or anything, but Real Madrid does feel like a bit of a problem game. You know, they won 3-0 at Athletic Club last night, you know, which is a tough place to go. They've had a few draws lately, but they've done well last night. Mbappe's got a couple of goals. He's on really good form. He's sort of on Haaland pacing for this year in terms of goals. And you think about how really good Guardiola teams, like obviously that famous collapse there at the Bernabeu in 2022, and then there was like say the year after the couple of years after when you know, the team that won the treble and the team that won four in a row both drew games there where they were, and I think on all of those games City were the better team, but you just couldn't shake them because there's something about Madrid and that ground and that competition.
Last season though it's like
Unfortunately, though, I think it's as much as we were saying before, and I think it's fair to say, things are better than they were last year. I'm afraid I'd expect a performance more like last season in Madrid than any of those ones I mentioned, those draws, because, yeah, it looks... All the things they're doing in terms of not keeping control of games, that's the sort of thing that could be a disaster out there.
Mm. Yeah, well, would you believe... Nobody predicted 5-4 against Fulham on last week's podcast. Funny that. Everyone has to do better, in my opinion. We go again this week. William Hill has given us three £10 correct score singles on City's games. The winnings are going to the Man City fans' food bank support group. They'll be outside the Etihad on Saturday up until about 2:30 p.m. collecting for Manchester Central Food Bank. So please go and see them with a donation if you can. We've only raised 75 quid so far this season, and it's December, so no pressure, everyone. We've heard already that Ant has gone for a 2-2 draw in... at the Etihad for Sunderland. That's 20-1 and £200 if he's right. Dom, what are you having for Sunderland's visit to Manchester?
I've gone for a really boring 2-1 because we need some bet wins.
A really boring 2-1 is 13-2. Weren't tempted by 5-4?
I'm just thinking that it's law of averages. It has to be a more normal game.
But... you would think. 13-2 if you're right, 65 quid. Sarah, what are you having for this one?
I've gone 3-2 and now I feel bad because... We need to raise money.
Well, 3-2 is 20-1, so it's 200 quid if you're right.
Can you not chuck me a tenner on Haaland to score any time and we'll just get our money back?
Well, I mean, it would be the one game, though, wouldn't it, where it didn't come in. That's you know how it works. But 3-2 is 20-1, so 200 quid if you're right on that one as well. That brings us to Real Madrid. Sarah, I'll start with you. What are you having for this one?
Following the theme to all, and I think it's probably quite optimistic for City, to be honest, but I do think, I don't know, Rail are so, they want, you know, you see them once and you think, this is a great Rail side. You see them again and you think, oh my God, they are so fragile. Fuck knows, basically.
Yeah, it sounds very much like a team not too far from here as well. So who knows what you're going to get when you stick them both in a mixing pot, but you get 10 to 1 for 2-2 and 100 quid if you're right. Dom, I get the sense you're feeling quite pessimistic. So come on, deliver the bad news.
Yeah, although I've just remembered, it's only a month since I covered Madrid at Liverpool and they were garbage.
Exactly.
Now, nevertheless, I've got them winning 3-1. It's Guardiola in the Bernabeu, where they'll all be bang up for it, and it could be a long, old evening from a City point of view.
It is 14 to 1 and 140 quid. I have taken a leaf out of a couple of seasons ago book and assumed that City are going to create a lot, score a lot, and concede a lot as well at the same time. So I've gone for 3-3. That is 28 to 1 and 280 quid, if I'm right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, have a look at gambleaware.org. We will finish with a listener question, because we've had one already. Get in touch on Blue Sky at bluemoonpodcast.com. You can email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com as well, and just search on Instagram for Blue Moon Podcast. That is exactly what Tommy has done. And he's got in touch to say, what do you think of the James Trafford story that he wants to leave because the negotiations that brought him to City centered around him challenging for the England position? Sarah, what do you make of the story, first off? Because like, Trafford signs in the summer, we expect him maybe to be number two behind Edison, and now here he is number two behind Donnarumma.
Well, there's no way they told him he'd be number two behind Edison, is there? I think at that point there was obviously conversations that made him think, there's no way he makes that move, is there, if he doesn't think he's going to play, because he has immediately just torpedoed World Cup chances. So there must have been a little bit of shenanigans there where he had no idea that, you know, he might have been given that nod where Edison starts the season, but when you come in, basically you keep the shirt, which obviously a lot of goalkeepers are told. You can't come in as a number one, but, you know, if they're dropped or if they get injured, then, you know, the shirt's yours, you keep it. And most goalkeepers have got the ego to think that they would keep it if they got it. There's no way he expected someone of the size, both literal and in terms of their presence, Donnarumma coming in. I massively feel sorry for Trafford, I must say. I think he's been ill-advised there for whatever reason. He's chosen to believe what he's been told. You know, he must be looking at it and thinking he could have joined Newcastle, and you know, probably would have been number one by now. Nick Pope's looked dodgy this season, and if Trafford was playing for Newcastle, he'd probably be England's second choice goalkeeper at least. So I do have a lot of sympathy for him, actually.
Yeah, Dom, do you think, like in many ways, with the way that it all unfolded, like the best case scenario for City in this sort of thing, and the kind of the way that City come out of this looking the best, I guess, is that they didn't know Donnarumma was going to be available. He became available, and then they did it. But like, how early could they have known?
From the information we have available, I think it has to be that of like, arguably the best goalkeeper in the world in some facets, not others, is available for a cup price, you go for it. Because they would need an Edison replacement. But also, it's the other side. So I see how it might have unfolded from that point of view. But it's been a long established thing that Edison wanted to go. So that can't have been a surprise. So yeah, you need to replace Edison. Could Ortega have just been number two to Trafford? I don't know. Again, it's the situation they're in, and they thought, you know, this guy, big personality, big mate of Haaland's, get him in. But yeah, I do feel for Trafford. That opening day of the season at Wolsey is a long time ago, but I remember that feeling really nice, that like a guy had come through the academy, had come back, and he was number one, and he was involved in one of the goals with a nice pass. Like, his last Premier League involvement for City was that brilliant save at Brighton, and then they conceded straight away anyway, which wasn't his fault. I just think it's not a nice situation. It feels like it's probably the sort of thing that's always going to happen when you look at City's last two transfer windows, when they've done so much and you're being so reactive, you've kind of lost control of your squad building a bit and you're trying to get that all back. Not every decision is going to be on the money, and there's going to be some collateral. The fact that some of the collateral, again, is a talented lad who came through City's youth team. And I know the club can't be sentimental about that, but I don't know. There's a lot of talented young lads who've come through that system, and there is Foden who's playing, and Nico O'Reilly now, occasional Rico Lewis. But you know, when you think about like how the game time McAtee got last year, you think you obviously Cole Palmer's one everyone always talks about, and Trafford now, it just doesn't look great. And also, I think next time there's a situation where fans are getting angry at a player for trying to force through a move or for joining someone else and they're getting pelts and getting booed, I mean, I think about James Trafford's last 6 months, because that's as brutal as it can be if a club decides they don't want you the way they did. You just cast aside. So it's, yeah, it's not a great situation.
Yeah. Just before we finish, Sarah, do you think he'll move?
I think he probably has to do. The loan move, I think, in January would absolutely suit him and probably suit City, because, it, like you say, him being around, it's not ideal, is it, at all? It kind of does shine not a great light. And like you said, from a fan's point of view, it's nice to feel a little warm feeling sometimes, isn't it? And thinking your club's done the right thing. And on this occasion, they kind of didn't do the right thing. Maybe they thought they would, and then they didn't. And it's horrible to think of people as collateral, isn't it? But I think Trafford has become that, like you say, of this accelerated squad building that's happened over the last, since January. And there's going to be a few people who almost never make more than a single digit appearances for City who come in 2025.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens as we get closer to the transfer window. But for now, that's it for this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much to my guests for this one. Dom Farrell.
Thank you very much.
And Sarah Winterburn.
Thank you, David.
There is a clip of the most recent Nostalgia episode coming up shortly. That was Agree to Disagree, where Dom, along with Dan Burke and Adam Monk, debated some very important issues, like whether City should return to laser blue, or whether Leroy Sané's goal at Arsenal is the best team goal that City will ever score. The full thing is available now for Patreon members. Head on over to members.bluemoonpodcast.com for more information. We've also got Christmas coming up, so if you're looking for a present for a City fan in your life, then you could also buy them a year's subscription to the Patreon. They'll get these shows ad-free, plus the Nostalgia episodes every Monday. And for more information on that, head on over to gift.bluemoonpodcast.com. I'll be back next week, so I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
I think the scoreline, it still feels like an outlier now. I think if you sort of mentioned the 6-1 to even your average Premier League fan, they'd know which game you were talking about. It is, it sort of stands in its own right.
It's that football cliche thing. Does it have its own Wikipedia page?
Yeah. Like, it's not, it's obviously, the scoreline has been replicated in other games, but I don't think any big derby games in sort of the Premier League era, you know, not just Manchester derby, but other big games like that, it does sort of stand alone in that way. One of my favourite things about it is the fact that the game previously at Old Trafford was the Rooney overhead kick when Mike Summerby was on commentary on Sky, well, not commentary, in the studio on Sky. And he said, didn't he, mark my words, you know, because City played pretty well that day. You know, probably should have got something from the game. And he said, mark my words, one of these days we'll come here and we'll tear these apart. And United fans still laugh at that to this day. And it's like, hang on, he was exactly right. Nostradamus almost, like, you know, the very next game, we came there 1-6-1. And that game, that result was not telegraphed whatsoever. You know, going into that game, City had made a good start to the season, so had United. I felt like we had a good chance of getting a result, but we'd not won there apart from that Munich anniversary game for such a long time in such a big sort of game. So to win 6-1, I think, you know, it was remarkable.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.